So the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita ultimately is to bring us to what Krishna says both at the end of the 9th chapter and at the end of the 18th chapter. He says, Manmanabhava Madbhakto, Madhyajimam Namaskaru, Mami Vaisashi Satyati, Manmanabhava, always think of me, just become my devotee. Very clear statements. And finally, if there's any doubt, well, what about this dharma and what about that dharma, then Krishna says, Sarva Dharma Amparitya. And that's Krishna's last word. He says, forget about any other dharma other than Mami Kam Sharanam Raja. Other than just surrender to me. But what happens? Won't I incur any type of sin? Or what if I neglect any type of other activity? Or some other type of religious duty? Won't I incur some type of offense or sin? No, aham tam sarva papebhyo. So I will protect you, Krishna says. Mokshayishyami maasucha. He says, don't worry. So this is what Srila Prabhupada was very concerned, that this message comes across to Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is actually saying. It requires, sometimes we elaborate somewhat on the words, but in order it requires magnification of the same thing, not distortion. And unfortunately, sometimes, for instance in this statement, there are very famous commentators who say, you don't have to surrender to Krishna. You surrender to the unborn within Krishna. You surrender to the Krishna within you. That's not what Krishna is saying. And yet somehow or another, other people bring this out. Krishna is standing in front of Arjuna. It's very clear. And he says, Sarva Dharma Amparitya, Maam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Maam Ekam Ekam. Just me. Just surrender to me alone. Not to anyone else, anywhere. And even if you say surrender to the unborn in Krishna, but Krishna's inside, Krishna's outside, it's all the same. There's no difference. Krishna is absolute. Because in the spiritual realm, inside, outside, it's all the same. And so Srila Prabhupada was very happy. And then that means that was 1966, in 1971 or 1972, then, ISKCON, we got back the rights, publishing rights for Macmillan. And then we started publishing. Up until then, we were only studying the abridged Bhagavad Gita. That's what we studied as devotees. And it was only in 1972 that we actually had the full edition of the Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada was writing. He used to go to sleep like at 10 o'clock at night, get up at midnight, and then he would translate. And it was an extraordinary experience at that time, because Prabhupada considered the main part of his mission was to actually translate Srimad Bhagavatam. And so he got all the way up to the beginning of the 10th canto, to the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, the 10th skanda. And Prabhupada would be doing these translations, and as soon as they were translated and edited, that they would be printed, and then so we would be getting these books, and so there were a lot of the books. The Hungarian version is a little different; it's compressed, but the Prabhupada's vision of his Srimad Bhagavatam was about 60 odd volumes, and Prabhupada had done 30 of those, so we were. We're getting every 2 months, we're getting a new book from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would say that every time that one of these books comes out, he says, I feel like I've conquered an empire. And in 1975, we did the largest run of a Bhagavad Gita. And at that time, BBT, Prabhupada, first, I remember when I first went to New York, then our publishing arm was called ISKCON Press. And then later, Prabhupada set up a completely separate corporation, institution, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. He didn't want ISKCON, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and his book trust to be so closely united that if there was ever any legal challenge to ISKCON properties, that the copyrights or the book publication rights could be lost. So he separated them, and they're separate to the present day. Of course, they're all devotees, members of ISKCON, who are managing the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And at 1975, then published 1 million Bhagavad Gitas, and that filled a whole train when they were transporting it from, I guess it was going to Los Angeles from the printer, and when Prabhupada pulled out a whole trainload full of Bhagavad Gitas, he was very, very pleased. And so that was Srila Prabhupada emphasized this as being half of his mission. One is to present the philosophical and theological basis of Krishna consciousness based on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then some other literature like Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's biography. And the other is that he wanted to show how does one live if one actually really wants to live fully or as fully as possible in harmony with Vedic teachings, which is then to follow the Vedic culture. And what's the social fabric of Vedic culture? It's called Varnashram. So Varnashram had fallen into ill repute in the last few hundred years in India as the caste system, which was really based upon bodily considerations, rather than what Krishna talks about as guna karma vibhagasa, people's qualities and their karma. But Prabhupada, that's why he wanted to establish these farming communities, because he wanted to show that more or less the ideal way of living, the way that Krishna lived himself. Krishna didn't work in a factory, he didn't do any business. Of course, he was a Kshatriya, and later he went to Dwarka. But even during the time when Dwarka was there and Mathura was there, the majority of the people were not living in cities, but it was an agrarian-based society. And of course, for the first 16 years of his life, Krishna was living in Vrindavan, and he was walking barefoot, and he was tending cows. And he was educated for 2 months. Of course, he's God, so he doesn't need so much education. But he only went to school for 2 months to Sandipani Muni. And on the basis of that, that was his dharma. And of course, the Brijbasis, they never left Vrindavan, even though they loved Krishna so much. But they loved Vrindavan more, so they wouldn't leave. They went to visit him at Kurukshetra when we have a Rath Yatra festival. That's what that represents, the Brijbasis bringing Krishna back to Kurukshetra, but they wouldn't leave and they wouldn't give up their dharma. They were cowherd men. So this thing of Krishi Gorakshavanijam Vaishya Karma Subhavajam, these are the activities of the Vaishyas, cow protection, commerce, trade. And particularly this type of, so Prabhupada wanted that if to show how people could live very, very simply, depend on the land, depend on the cows, and live the way that Krishna had lived. And that's why it was his farming communities. And that's why he actually came back. He was emphasizing that from 1975 on. Prabhupada very much emphasized Varnashram. And which the essence of Varnashram being self-sufficient according to principles that we see Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita. And to be able to eat the immediate results of your work, not have it translated into some pieces of paper that then you have to go buy something, but directly be able to communicate all. And what do we need? You need vegetables, you need grains, you need fruit, you need milk. And if you have these things, of course, self-sufficiency in a place like Hungary is more difficult than in India, because the climate isn't. If it was like this here all year round, then it would be no problem. If we had 2-3 growing seasons, then then when it gets snow and it gets cold, and then you just have to, you don't eat fresh things, you eat what actually has been preserved or something that's in storage, then it's sort of a different type of self-sufficiency. And then when you have to heat, and you have to have double glazing, and you have big buildings and all of these things, it really complicates life. It really complicates life. Therefore, there's one saying, one of my godbrothers says, is that human beings are not supposed to live beyond where palm trees don't grow. In other words, where palm trees don't grow, then you're not supposed to live there. But of course, there's some type of palm trees go around here in Hungary, and down in Pécs and Szeged, and they have different things like figs and so on, they grow. But still, and that's the purpose of New Brajadham or Krishna Valley, is to actually show that lifestyle. And devotees do very well, although we don't grow our own rice, and we don't we have to purchase some things. But especially from now through till around November, the philosophy is we eat what grows. Usually, you eat what you want, and then you go and buy it. So whatever's in the garden, that's what you eat. And what's not in the garden, then you just don't eat that. So it's very nice. Of course, we supplement that in the winter months and early spring until things come. But right now, it's really quite amazing how we have just in the garden of the house that I stay in at the farm, we have just some apricot trees. You can't eat enough. Even if you were like a ravana with 10 heads, you can't eat all the apricots that come off of one tree. And they're extraordinarily good. What to speak of all of the other things, so many wonderful fruits and vegetables. I came up the other day and we brought our own Karela that grows there, very, very good, very bitter Karela that grows on the farm. But Srila Prabhupada said that this is the second half of his mission, and he said, my mission is unfulfilled, incomplete. He said, I've done, the books are there, but I wanted to actually show, and Prabhupada personally wanted to come and teach devotees how to do things, how to live simply. It's really, really difficult to give up habits of complicated lifestyle and to just get back to the basics. Now, I see that sometimes when we have guests and we give a little presentation, for instance, the devotees who take care of the cows, I said, you see those boys who take care of the cows? I said, I'd give 1,000 computer programmers for one of them. Because it's so difficult to find someone who has that type of mentality that they'll dedicate their whole life just to working with the cows and the bulls. What to speak of going behind the bulls? We have one devotee. His name is Antar D, and he's been there for 20 years since the founding of the farm. And he works with the bulls. And the animals, they grow all of their own food, all with very, very simple implements. And he plows. He plows, and he does it barefoot, just like in India. He plows barefoot, he walks barefoot. It's only in the wintertime that he puts on shoes. Otherwise, just like Krishna. Krishna would not, when Mother Yashoda said, you should wear shoes, he says, but we're cowherd men. The cows don't wear shoes, so we don't wear shoes. He says, don't worry. He says, I'll be all right. So he's also like that. So those type of people are very, very rare. Very rare. Just to get someone who's satisfied for working in a garden and gardening is very, very difficult because they're so used to, I've got to have a diploma, I've got to have all these complicated things and how to work. And of course then the psychology is, I'm here and I'm taking care of this cow, and it's taking me all day long, and this cow is now going to give me 15 liters of milk or something, or 20 liters of milk, or in the wintertime, 10 liters of milk. But if I dedicated, if I was working somewhere in a business, or if I was having my business, I'd make enough money, you know, to make 1,000 liters a day. So, the Prabhupada's answer was, no, it's the principle. We don't need 1,000. You don't need 1,000 liters. All you need is 0.5 liter for yourself. So, it's the principle. We don't need to make artificial ways of getting, because what to speak of, how does those 1,000 liters of milk come? They come from cows who are very brutally treated and who are ultimately slaughtered because it economically doesn't work. The price of milk that we purchase now is not it's a subsidized price. It's both subsidized and at the same time it only works when at 2 or 3 years old the cow is slaughtered and killed. And then, of course, bulls, they go at an earlier age. So, no, but we don't want to buy milk like that. We want to have milk, just like all of our cows on our farm now, they're all born there. So they're all devotees. Literally speaking, you go with kirtan, they all come. They all have Sanskrit names, they speak Sanskrit, they don't speak. They understand Sanskrit, they know what left is, right is, stop is, and everything, and they respond to that. And Krishi Goraksha means cow protection. And that's the basis of Indian culture. Indian culture was based on that. That was one of BJP's main fortes. They wanted, yes, that everyone should learn Sanskrit, Bhagavad Gita should be taught in every school, and cow slaughter should be stopped in India. But you're not going to get everybody's vote like that. That was the problem. Ideology and politics are sometimes really hard to wed. And that type of Sapsing Varma, you know Sapsing Varma, he was the chief minister of Delhi, and then he had to resign, and just recently had a car accident and died. And so he was with Vajpayee and others. He was very he was in the inner circle of BJP, and I used to, he actually helped us quite a bit here. In fact, he was willing to come to Hungary when we had this whole argument with the government about our religious status, and then that, you know, we're going to lose our 1%. And he lived in Delhi, in the chief minister's house, and every time I visit him, and he had a goshala downtown Delhi, and he was a very, very nice man, but he explained this. Yes, we had all of these plans, but it's very hard in politics to realize them in a democracy. If it was a monarchy, and we just tell them what to do, that's a different story. But if you're dependent on votes, then it's not going to work.
He was in Moscow.
Huh?
He visited Moscow? Yes, in a big way. He promoted and helped.
Yes, yeah.
I was there at that time.
Uh-huh.
So we were family friends.
Yeah. Oh, you know the Sapsing Varma. I just heard, it was just last year, the year before, someone had told me that he was in that accident.
He's no more.
He was supposed to be the Prime Minister if he was alive.
Because he was young.
So, yes, young.
And he was very nice. Very charismatic man.
Charismatic.
And very religious person. Although, I don't know, I went to see him many, many times. Every time I'd come, he'd always come with a chatter and give a chatter. And it was always very, very nice, very respectful gentleman. So that's the principle. That's what India is based on. That's actually the Dharma of India, is cow protection. And these very basic principles, that if we protect them, then automatically, as Upanishads say, Ishava Samidan Sarvam Yatkinchat Chagatyam Chagat, everyone has their particular quota. And if we act according to the basic principles of Dharma, then ultimately everything comes. But if we act in an adharmic way, even though we may have temporary results, in the long run everything will implode. And that's what we see in history. History is not, as sometimes people like us to believe, some type of linear escalating things. History is cyclical like this. It means there's economic development and religiosity and on the sense gratification, ultimately the karma compounds and then it goes down, whether it becomes a war or a plague or an economic collapse or something, and then once again it's up. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to show what is this dharmic way of life, free of karma, and it can be practiced in cities, but more difficult. But in the country, it becomes very easy. So anyway, please come to visit Krishna Valley, especially Janmashtami. We'll have nice festival, and we're fasting until midnight, and then we have midnight arti, and it's down in Somaj Vamos, which is near Fonyod, just off the Balaton. I'm just thinking, because of the time, it's end of August, so there's still many places that can be hotels that are open nearby, because the beginning of September they close, once the tourist season is finished. But since that's August, and so it's a very nice festival. And we have fireworks from Pravachan and Kirtan all day long, and then arti at midnight, and prasadam. And the next day, although that's next day, we start very early. We have, that is Prabhupada's appearance day, and then we celebrate that. And then after that, everything is really finished. Everyone's very tired. Hare Krishna. I don't want to just keep talking like that. Would anyone would like to say something or ask something? Or Vijay, you have any ideas what we should do?
Samiji was, as we said before, that Krishna said, Arjun, that you just surrender yourself to me, and I'll take care. I'll protect you. I'll take care of everything. Then at a certain moment, he says, I am your consciousness. I'm your awareness. Krishna, I'm your... So that awareness, what awareness is he referring to? I'm awareness in you.
Yeah, in the 10th chapter, Krishna says that he is the... He's the life of all living entities, in jivasyam sarvabhuteshu. And he also says that I'm the, within the soul, he is ultimately the cause of the soul. So Krishna is the super soul, is present within this body. Just like the soul is here, super soul is also here. But ultimately, in Bhagavatam, Krishna says, Aham eva sameva gre. He says, in the beginning, there was just me. What you see now is me, and in conclusion, there will only be me. So, ultimately, we are little expansions. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
How are you?
Fine. Hare Krishna.
Nice to see you, Parveen. Everyone else? Did you come alone?
No,
Ritu's here?
Yeah.
Children?
Oh, we are in England.
Hare Krishna, Ritu. How are you? Hare Bo. I managed to come here, even though I didn't come to your place. So that Krishna is the ultimate source or the cause and the energy which is present there within the soul. And Krishna is, in terms of conscience, Krishna is the super soul who says that he is actually giving instruction, he's giving guidance. Yantra Rudani Mayaya. This is that that within every living body, Ishwaram Sarvadineshu, that within every living body, Krishna is present as the super soul. So he tells us. He tells us what we should do. Question is whether we are able to hear him.
So does it mean the same thing that you just surrender yourself to your awareness? Oh. As he's saying that you surrender yourself to me, Arjun, you surrender yourself to me, I'll take care, I'll protect you. But me is your awareness.
No, Krishna is Krishna. You surrender to Krishna as the person. He's also present in our heart, and he's also giving instruction. But that may be more difficult for us to actually hear, because we hear so many things. We hear our minds, we hear other things. But here is Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. Now he says, now you just surrender to me. So surrender to what? Surrender to what I've just told you in the Bhagavad Gita. Surrender to the instructions which are very explicit and very clear in the Vedas. Ultimately, Krishna says, Vedashisarvairaham. He says, all of these Vedas. He says, the purpose of the Vedas is to know me. He says, I'm the speaker of the Veda. So, like when you go to school, in the beginning, everything you have to learn from the teacher, and you have to learn from the textbooks. When you really digested all of those things and really understood the essence, say, as a surgeon or something like that, a doctor, then ultimately you'll come to the stage where naturally, spontaneously, you'll know what to do. Or cooking. In the beginning, you have to learn all the different arts of cooking and all the spices and how to mix together, and you have to do everything the way you're taught. But once you learn the science, then naturally, spontaneously, whatever you decide to cook will come out nice, will come out good, because you know the essence. So if we learn how to follow when Krishna says, surrender to me, we surrender and follow Krishna's instructions. He tells us how to work. He tells us how to eat. He tells us how to sleep. He tells us how to have recreation. Everything's there in the Gita or in other Vedic literature. When we become very good at that, then naturally we'll spontaneously be able to do those things. We'll know what to do. And then in all spheres of life, yat karoshi, yat ashnashi, whatever you're doing, and you do it according to the religious way, the proper way. And once the heart becomes very purified, then just in the way that I'm speaking, then we'll actually hear Krishna from within speaking. If we're in doubt, what should I do? Oh, you do this. So Prabhupada had said when he was writing, he said that when I'm writing the books, Krishna is dictating to me, and I'm writing down what he says. So hearing Krishna becomes a matter of purity. It requires a certain level of purity to hear him from within. But to get there, we need to practice by hearing in the standard way. And ultimately, Shastra is the authority.
Once it is practiced in that way, that will take care itself, that will take care of you. That will take care of us.
Yeah, dharma, rakshati dharma. If we take care of dharma, then dharma will take care of us. Yeah. And that's a very, very essential principle, that we know this, that and we have faith in this principle, that to act and work in a dharmic way, then we will actually be taken care of like that. Like because I was in England for a start, I got to know the Hindujas very well. And aside from everything else, but their name were Hinduja, because it was meant to symbolize that they're going to live and work according to the principles of Hindutva. of real Dharma, Hindu Dharma. Of course, that's not always like that in terms of everything that they did. But still, that's that principle, that if we stick to those, that way of living that's given to us by God, ultimately we'll get what we need. We may not necessarily get what we want, but we'll get what we need and what we deserve. And then we should be satisfied with that. Because then when we try to go beyond and get more, then we have to do things that fall outside of our dharma in order to get some result. And a person has to know, and that's why Ishopanishad says that everyone has his quota. What is my quota? And to know that I'm not trying to get more than my quota. And some quota, somebody's quota is to be a Hinduja, somebody's quota is to be a Sudama Vipra. But then, and Vedic culture taught that whatever it is, you be satisfied with that. But for that, it's a different type of culture. Now, our Western society, the principle is, everyone should be a Hinduja, or everyone should be a multimillionaire. Everyone should become a Rockefeller. But that's mathematically it's not possible. Economically it's not possible. It's cheating. But that then becomes the motivation, and therefore immediately that there would be any type of limit, or that there should be any restriction, where people should become aware of, well, what comes naturally to me? And what is my nature? According to my nature, what can I achieve? And that's why, not even just in India, but in the Western world, people's lives would first of all be molded by their beliefs, by their principles, and they would be God-centered people generally. They would live relatively simply, and they would be happy with things that came of their own accord and that didn't compromise their time for spiritual life. So that's why, like in Hungary, in every little village there's 2-3 churches, but in everywhere it's the same. Or you go to India, everywhere there were temples. So it didn't, why? Because that was the center of people's lives. That it didn't compromise the family. Everyone had time for their family. Not that I'm so busy, I don't have time for my family, I don't have time for religious life, I don't have time for myself, I just have time for my job, which then becomes pointless. And unfortunately, that's why there are so many types of sociological problems in our society today. And people have so many psychological problems, because they're in this artificial mechanism where everyone's really meant to achieve, and your value is only measured on the basis of what you've got, not who you are. If you happen to be a Sudama Vipra, you may be a saint with only one set of clothes, you're a failure. But if you're a crook with 1,000 shoes and a wardrobe that stretches 100 yards, then you're a success. Yeah, so we shouldn't compromise who we are, or the quality, the nature of our being or values, for achieving certain ends. We don't compromise our values, and then it's okay.
Yes, 4 ashrams is strong in the Vedic knowledge, but the strong pillar,
yes,
the guideline.
Yes.
But how to divide in each stage your responsibility? And
Brahmacharya. Yes. And there was the varnas and ashramas. So we had ashrama, we had brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprast, sannyas. And then everyone had their rights and obligations. It was not just a division, but then there was laws that bound everybody. So like there was no such thing as bachelors in Vedic culture. from first 25 years of your life, you're celibate. Boys and girls don't mix, and everyone goes to Gurukula. Well, mostly boys went to Gurukula, girls would be taught at home. Boys went to Gurukula, they learned how to become quality people. And they learned a particular trade, and then at 25 years of age, or one quarter of their life, say, then if they wanted to marry, then they marry. And then that's it, then you don't get divorced, and you don't have affairs with others, and then it's for bringing quality children into the world. And then there's rules that govern marriage. And then at a certain point, then vanaprastha, when the children become old enough and they can take care of themselves, and you've reached pancha urdhvam vanam vrajet, 50 years old, then at age 50, then one retires. And then once again, one can concentrate one's full energy on spiritual life. And then if, although in this age it's rare, but then if someone really is qualified, then they may take sannyas. So we call it, in this age they call it, that someone retires, but retirement just means everyone falls into ignorance, tamagun. They watch TV all day long, they go fishing, they play checkers. That's not what you do in the last part of your life. That's not how you prepare yourself to meet God, by playing checkers and going fishing. So, but now I have free time again. I've saved enough to maintain myself. The children, they're maintaining themselves. So now, not that I'm working until I drop dead, but now at this certain point, now I retire and I just concentrate again, same way as I did when I was young, and now I continue that, so that when I leave this body, then I can attain perfection. Yeah, and that was very important, that there were the ashrama, and then there was also varna. So that varna meant that people, it's there anyway, it's just that people don't know that people have different types of work, different types of nature, and they have work according to their type of nature. So now, without recognizing that, then more or less you try to train everyone to become a computer programmer or a computer technician. But you don't need that many computer technicians, aside from which, by nature, people aren't necessarily computer technicians. People have natures. Everyone doesn't need to go to university. There were universities, so there was higher education, but everyone doesn't need higher education. I think, so many here, we have our college here as well, where we teach like all these PhDs. If I put them beside a tomato plant or some other plant, they won't know the difference. Then what do you? And if I tell you now, you have to live in this garden and make, and then what will they do with their diploma? How will they don't even know how to grow anything, how to feed themselves? Some of the very, very basic things of life. Life has become extremely complicated, and unfortunately, that's Kali Yuga. Age of Kali. Should we chant a little more and then have prasad? Thank you.
I was about to say.
You were about to say that?
Yes.
Okay.